This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
More details on the Texas church shooting. We have them here on Tactics. Good morning, everybody. I have no idea what is going on with my soundboard today. I've tried about 8 or 9 different things, and it just does not want to cooperate. So right now, all I have is a microphone. I'm going to use that. Welcome in, everybody. It is great to be with you on this Tuesday morning. We do have some new details about what is going on and what is happening over in the Texas massacre. New details have come to light. We have a motive. Everything seems to be moving, as unfortunately these things tend to do, which there's kind of a protocol now because of how often something tragic like this happens. One thing that was incredibly staggering to me is I knew this was a small church, and I knew it was a small church inside a small town, but even I did not realize exactly how small we were talking. This town's population is so tiny that about 10% of the entire church's population was in this church, according to one report. So their town's population is right around 500-ish. So with 50 people being in this Baptist church, that was 10% of their town. Now think about that. I know if you're living in Montgomery, that's a little bit harder to fathom. Maybe if you live in the outlying areas like Marbury or Deatsville and you're coming in, it's a little easier to imagine. But 10% of your entire town's population being completely either wiped out or most of them being in the hospital. Because with 26 deaths, that's about 5% of your town. And then you've got several more. So everybody knew everybody. This was just a small, sleepy little haven in Texas. And they've been absolutely devastated. And now we're learning new information. The victims' ages range from prenatal to 72. One of the persons that died was an unborn child. A pregnant woman was shot, and she and her baby were lost. So this is about as wide an age range victim-wise as you could get. The next oldest victim was 18 months old. An 18-month-year-old baby was also killed in this horrendous attack. So the ages are all over the map. And this town is absolutely feeling a deep sense of loss. And I imagine not just loss, but they feel a little bit lost themselves. The guest speaker, because the preacher was actually out of town, he and his wife were off doing something else, I guess speaking at another congregation or something. It didn't actually give any details. So they were not in the church when this happened. But the guest speaker that had come to fill in for him, and I can relate to this a little bit because I've been guest speaking at churches for a really long time. In fact, that's most often the time that I do preach is when a preacher has to be out for medical reasons or to go on a trip so he can preach somewhere else, things like that. Usually that's when I come and fill in. And so this guy was the guest preacher, and he and his wife were killed. His daughter was not there. So she lost her father, her mother, and the lady that I told you about who was pregnant, that was her sister-in-law. And she lost 5 nieces and nephews. You remember I told you the preacher and his wife were actually away for that Sunday, but their daughter Annabelle was not. They lost her in this as well. I was reading a great story, and I don't remember all the details because I just saw it literally minutes before I got in here. But it was a story from The Blaze. I went ahead and posted it on Twitter and Facebook. So if you want to read the whole story, read the actual details yourself, you can look at that. There's one man who lost his son and their wife. And I believe, if I'm remembering my numbers correctly, 4 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. And that means he's lost 9 members of his close family within minutes of each other. In an interview that he gave, he said that they asked him about the shooter himself and what he would say to the shooter if he were alive. And he said, "I don't have any remorse towards him. I don't hate him. I feel really sorry for him because he must have really had some trouble himself to have done something like this." I'm paraphrasing there, of course, because I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but this is the stuff that we should be talking about today. The family members that, through everything that they've been going through and having to think about what their life looks like now, because think about this with this guy. He no longer has a son or his wife or presumably their kids and their several of his great-grandkids. This man's life is completely different. I mean, losing a loved one, especially a close loved one, is always a life-changing experience. But this, his world has been completely turned upside down. I can't imagine going through something like that, losing that many family members all at once. But that's the reality of what he has to do, and he has to wake up every morning now knowing that they're not going to be there anymore. And yet, despite all of that, he's out there talking about love and forgiveness and that Christ could have even saved this guy. He says that he's not worried about what happened to his grandkids and everybody else because he said that he's going to be reunited with them one day. And he said, as far as being angry at the shooter, he says it's not going to make a difference. Said he made his decisions, God's going to reward him justly, I'm sure, and that's all on him. It's out of my hands. Me being angry is not going to do anything about it. These are the kinds of people we should be talking about. And I'm honestly so bothered by the fact that a lot of people want to use this as a political football to toss around with each other. Deeply disturbing that someone would want to do that. Let's take some time to wrap our arms around the family before we get into arguments with one another. I don't think that's beneficial. I don't think it helps anybody. In fact, we'll talk about maybe some of the motives and why some people would want to do that. A little bit down the road. I don't know if we're going to talk about it next, but we're going to talk about it soon. 860-1440 if you want to weigh in. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The Declaration of Independence laid the cornerstone of human government upon the first precepts of Christianity. John Quincy Adams.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in and let me know what is on your mind. Got a lot to mention this morning, so let's go straight into it. Some of the new details on the Texas shooting. We know that the murderer was denied a gun permit because of his domestic violence. So this is a guy that has a history of domestic violence. That actually we did know. We talked about it the other day while he was in the Air Force. He was just charged because of a complaint, a assault on his wife and their young son. So we already knew for a fact that this guy was not necessarily a good guy. He did legally purchase at least one of the firearms used in Colorado. He had a rifle and 2 handguns. But the murderer was denied a gun permit because of his was denied a gun permit there in Texas because of his domestic violence background, but that didn't stop him from getting the gun. So you might be asking, well, why is that the case? The state of Texas did their homework and found out about this domestic violence thing and kept him from getting a gun permit. The federally licensed firearms dealers did not, and the reason they did not is because his name didn't pop up in their database because the Air Force neglected to report him or any other of those that went through that process, because the military legal system is almost a completely separate animal from the American legal system. That's the reason that there was this big discussion a couple of years ago about whether to try terrorists at Guantanamo in civilian courts or in, you know, the actual military tribunals. And so military law is an animal in and of itself. And I may actually talk to one of my buddies. I'm going to see him here in just a little bit anyway, who is a lawyer for both civil and was a JAG for a little while. So I may actually discuss this with him and see about that. But the point is, the information was out there and it was illegal for him to have a gun. The only reason that he was able to purchase one, at least based on what we're seeing, we don't know if this incident happened before or after he purchased the gun, or at least I haven't seen any reporting on it. Maybe that information's out there, but I haven't found it. If you do find it, tweet it to us at Tactics Radio. But either way, he shouldn't have been able to have a gun. And if he did, because he did purchase these guns legally, if he did so after the fact, it was because that information was not in the federal firearms database, because the Air Force doesn't report that stuff. So that's something that it doesn't even necessarily take a law. We can fix that with just a policy change. In fact, this is one of those rare times where we're seeing something from a government standpoint that we can do something that would have prevented something like this. Same thing with one of the other shooters. I'm not sure which one. I want to say it was Dylan Roof, but one of the firearms that he used... it was Dylan Roof. One of the firearms that he used is that the FBI had not reported it properly, reported one of the incidents properly, which is the reason that he was able to get one of the guns that he did. So again, that's not a flaw in the law. That's a flaw in human error, and changing the law wouldn't have done anything. So in both of these cases, which ironically and unfortunately both of these cases involve people that shot at churches, both of these people would have been prevented from being able to purchase a gun had that information been brought to the proper authorities' attention. And here's the thing. You guys know I'm incredibly pro-gun rights. I have a pistol on me right now. I always carry one with me, including to church. Even Kevin Elkins this morning said, well, I'm never going to pick at you again for carrying a firearm to church. I hate that we live in a world where that's even a concern. Believe me, I would love to live in a place where we are completely safe at church and everybody there is untouchable, but clearly that is not the way the world works. But the point is, in both of these cases, there was something the government could have done to prevent it. But this is a mistake caused by a human error, not because of a lapse in the laws. It was illegal for them to have their firearms. So all we need to do is tighten up the screws, and as big a pro-gun advocate as I am and pro-Second Amendment, I have no problem with people that have prior crimes that would lead us to believe that they don't need to have a gun because they cannot be trusted with it. I believe that it's an absolute right, but just like the freedom of mobility, the freedom of speech, that right can be taken away from you if you do something that harms another person and makes us believe that you cannot be trusted with it. It's an inborn, inalienable right, but once you violate the rights of another person with that, then that right can be abridged. I'm not saying you speed or anything like that, actual violent offenses, but this is something that we should all be able to come together on and agree on, and this isn't necessarily... this isn't necessarily a law change issue. This is just a policy change. This is something that could have actually helped prevent this event from happening. We do know that his only offense was in the military, and since they hadn't submitted that record, then, of course, that didn't get reported. Now, here's another interesting thing about this, and this isn't something you're going to hear from a lot of the mainstream media. The hero who shot the murderer, his name is Stephen Williford, and this guy, it's the guy that came out, chased him down, and he saw him, he shot at him a couple of times. The man was wearing tactical body armor. He hit him at a weakness in his body armor. I don't know how intentional that was or if it was providence. But this guy, he knew what he was doing because, check this out, Stephen Wilford is a card-carrying NRA member and instructor, so he teaches other people how to shoot in these situations. And it just so happened, again, I'm not sure if he just happened to know where the weakness in the body armor was or that was what he was aiming for, or he just got lucky, and by lucky I mean God guided his ammo. But my point in all that is he did shoot the shooter. And he's also the guy that jumped in the truck with this stranger and pursued him. So when we're talking about heroes, this is the only time I can ever remember an actual NRA member, not people blaming the NRA, someone actually with the NRA is involved in a mass shooting, and it's the guy that shoots the shooter. So, you know, maybe think twice about blaming the NRA on this one, because the only NRA angle in this story that I've been able to find, the only connection so far, is that the NRA was the guy that shot him, who chased the shooter off.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, all. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to call and weigh in, let me know what is on your mind, what's going on. Now, we are going through some of the things that we've learned about the Texas shooting. This shooter apparently was an outsider, but not a stranger. So this is not somebody who lived in their town, not somebody that a lot of these people knew, but he did have a connection to the church. This was his wife's home congregation. So the church that she grew up in, that kind of thing. And because she grew up there and because this all took place, apparently that's the connection that he had there. His in-laws went there. And because his in-laws went there, that may have been part of the reason that he chose this particular church. Remember, this is the same wife. This is his ex-wife, the one that he was kicked out of the Air Force for getting a restraining order against for assaulting her and the child. Now, she attends somebody else now, but she had been a Bible class teacher here at this church. And like I said, his in-laws still attend there. They're still members, but they just happen to not be there this morning. So I'm going to break this down for you really quickly, and then I'll be really interested to hear what your reaction is. So 860-1440 if you want to go ahead and get in on the phones. You can also tweet at Tactics Radio because I really do want to go to that in the next segment. But I'm going to break this down for you, and let me know if you think that I'm reading too much into this or this case makes sense to you. The authorities are now attributing this to a domestic dispute because there is that connection that his wife used to go there, his in-laws go there currently, and so they're saying this is a domestic dispute. But let's explore that. First of all, unless they have details to the contrary, there is no reason to believe that he has been in any kind of recent connection to his in-laws or to his wife. Now, that does not mean for an absolute fact that that was not something that played into his motive. However, that has not come out yet. It's not like he got into a fight with them recently or anything like that. But that is where it appears to kind of maybe not completely dismantle, but certainly add some speculation or some skepticism to anybody that's really looking for a motive here. I do think that there's absolutely no doubt that his connection to his wife, his in-laws, to this church is the reason that he chose this target. But there's a difference in the reason he chose this target and the motive itself. He had frequent radical atheist anti-Christian social media posts. That's something that's well known. In fact, there are several people who talked about this. He was saying that people who love God must be complete or believe in God must be stupid. Just pretty horrible, horrible thing, some of the posts that you can look up. The testimony from those who knew him talked about how a lot of them stopped being friends with him after right around high school and college because of how militant he was on not believing in God and how boisterous he was about his atheist stances. Some of them even said, look, I didn't even necessarily mind being friends with him being an atheist, but he was just so militant about it all the time that eventually I had to stop being friends with this guy. There were about three or four different people that they found that they interviewed that said the same thing about this guy. Not necessarily a likable guy, not somebody you'd want to hang around with. Let's keep in mind, too, that he attacked the church without checking if the in-laws were going to be there or not. Now, maybe he couldn't. Maybe he had no way of knowing they weren't going to be there. Maybe he was hoping they were going to be there. But here's the thing. If your primary motive is to go after your in-laws or go after your wife, you don't go to a church to shoot them up. If your primary motive is to get them, you wait at their house because that's where they're most likely to be. And this is somebody that was not completely unfamiliar with these people. He would have known it or at least had some semblance of what their schedules were. So if this guy's primary objective was, I want to kill my in-laws or I want to kill my ex-wife or I want to kill all three of them, it makes far more sense to go to a place where you know they're going to all be together. Not this church that his wife hasn't attended regularly in a long time. If you do that, like I said, you go to their house, you go to their apartment, you wait them out there, and you don't rush in not knowing whether they're there or not. This guy wanted to shoot up a church. I think that he thought it would be icing on the cake that if he got his in-laws or got his ex-wife that happened to be there that Sunday. But it is clear to me that that was a secondary objective at best, based on what I'm seeing. It doesn't really make sense or hold water if you're going by the theory that his main thing was, I want to go after my in-laws or my family. So I think that it's clear to say that the domestic angle, the fact that he did have a connection to this church in a secondary way, I think that that's absolutely the reason that he chose his target the way that he did. But I really don't think that that is a justifiable reason to go out and simply attack the church. I think that it makes sense that this guy was a, if you're looking at it, religious reasons seem to be his strongest motivating factor. What we know about him being an atheist, being very militant towards Christians, being very vocal in that, both on social media and in his personal dealings, his history of violence, and the fact that, so I think that there's no doubt that he chose this church because he had a connection to it, but I don't think that you can classify it as a domestic dispute, because if that's the case, a lot of his actions don't make sense. This guy just wanted to shoot up a church and cause mass casualties. It wasn't about, because another thing too, he would have noticed that his in-laws and his ex-wife were not there. I mean, he knows what these people look like. He presumably had known them for years and years and years, and even if he hadn't seen them in a little while after that. So he could have seen them and then walked right back out, and no harm, no foul. He could have scoped out the place, didn't. It's clear to me that his motive was he just wanted to kill people. He wanted to kill people that were there to worship God. And you can offer an alternate theory if you want to. I'm open to hearing that, 860-1440. Maybe that I'm reading this wrong, or maybe there's something that I've overlooked in the news coverage. But based on everything I can tell, I think the authorities got this one wrong. Usually they don't. But if I'm looking at the evidence right here, I have to call this a religious reason, because if you're going with the domestic angle, that just none of this really adds up. But that's where we are right now. It looks like we have a caller on line one. We can go ahead and take one caller before we go to the break. Let's go ahead and take that call. Good morning. What's your name?
This is Dave.
Hey, Dave. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, I agree with you. I would think, and I don't know for sure, but I would think nearly 500 rounds of whatever he had, 223, would probably be about 50 pounds or maybe 10 or 15 magazines loaded. That isn't to kill three people.
No, it makes no sense if he was going there to get revenge or something like that. It just, it boggles the mind. I don't
it's
know.
Evil.
If, I think
it's
the
just,
reason, it is evil, and I think the reason that they're doing this is because it's PC. I think they feel that people knowing he killed them just because they were Christians. They don't want to get that narrative out there.
I agree with you 100%.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, good to talk to Dave. Anybody else wants to call in, you're free to do so. Be happy to take your call, but I'm with Dave on this. If that's the case, that's another thing that I didn't mention. He's decked out head to toe in tactical gear. He's got, he was ready for a firefight. If you were going to kill somebody, there's much, much, much easier ways to do it. You can use a gun, you can use something else, but this guy, kind of like the Las Vegas shooter, they're similar in this sense that they had way more ammunition than they needed to kill any one specific person. They had lots of tactical gear to assist them to do that. So that motive doesn't make sense to me. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't. And I usually have a lot of respect for the investigation, a lot of respect for the authorities. I think that a lot of them are trying to do their job, but I'm thinking somebody somewhere, maybe the sheriff, maybe the mayor or something like that of the local town's police force, if they even have one, if they're this size, I don't know. Somebody made the call with, we're going to go ahead with domestic because we kind of have a little bit of a domestic angle, but it seems to me this is pretty open and shut. And again, maybe I'm just missing a piece of evidence, but it looks to me that motive absolutely was religious reasons. We've got another caller online too. Who's this?
It's Curtis.
Hey, Curtis. Good to hear from you, my man. What's on your mind this morning?
Hey, I haven't caught the whole show, so I apologize if I'm talking about things you've already spoke to. With regards to shooter Cannon in this alibi, with regard to whether the Air Force failed to forward his conviction to the right clearing agency or computer programming system, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we don't know for certain whether or not they tried to do it or it got deleted. I mean, who knows? It's just a typical government thing. It could have gotten screwed up. But
well, this is the only thing that we really know about it based on what I've seen, is that the Air Force didn't report it, and they have not reported any of the people that are involved in these domestic restraining orders. So
why?
I'm guessing.
Do we know why?
I don't know why, actually.
That's one thing. But so, and I guess time will sort that one out, Caleb. But the other question is: let's just say they did report it, and it went in there.
Yeah,
was it going to stop this guy from getting a gun somewhere?
Oh, absolutely not. He's going to find one somewhere.
Of course. So that's my only point. I mean, the government. Here the government messed it up, or something happened. There was a snafu with computer systems, or I don't know, but even so, to think that, it's going to prevent this crazy guy from going out committing an evil act is preposterous.
Yeah, and another thing, Curtis, is I don't know of a single person. They talk about gun rights people always wanting crazy people to get their hands on firearms. This is somebody that it was already against the law for him to have one. He shouldn't have been able to get one, and I don't know a single conservative that's not saying, this is clearly an issue of human error. Let's figure out something to close that loophole, something that we can do to get reporting, because guys like us, we don't want bad guys with guns because they make us look bad.
And what would you do? Let's just say anybody in the neighborhood said, that guy that lives over there, he's crazy. He should never own a gun. He's been arrested. He's been convicted. He's a felon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What do you do? Go to the police and say, hey, make sure he doesn't buy any guns this weekend.
Yeah, I don't even know if the local police could do anything about that, even if you did tell them.
Yeah, to believe that we think that another law, the government is somehow going to make us that much safer. It can make us a little safer, but I just think this was going to happen, and this guy was hell-bent on committing evil, and he did.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line. Thank you so much for your call, Curtis. I always appreciate talking to you. And I'm trying to do the best that I can to keep this out of the realm of politics. I got dangerously close with that last call, but I understand where Curtis is coming from, and seeing everybody go after this as a political issue and get frustrated, and I 100% understand the frustration with that. I try to stay away from that at least until 48 hours, and so 48 hours is almost up, but it won't be up until about 11:30 today. But I don't want to get into the politics, but the bottom line in all this is, if you believe in a world that evil exists, that we're not all just products of our society or anything like that, that we actually do have free will and we can make good choices and we can make bad choices, then you have to believe that somebody that is bound and determined to make a bad choice, like killing a lot of people in a short amount of time, is going to find the most efficient way to do it. You can make that argument regardless of what it is. Keep in mind, just a week ago, somebody killed 8 people with a truck in New York City. Has nothing to do with a gun. And that's not a political statement or anything. That's just acknowledging that evil exists and people are going to make bad decisions. And if they want to make bad decisions badly enough, they will find ways to do them. I wish that that was not the way that it was. I wish that there was something we could do to stop that. But at the same time, if we want to live in a world where we have free will, where we can make correct decisions, we have to also accept the fact that we live in a world where other people have free will and have the ability to make evil decisions. We can't control what they do, but we can control how we react to it. And that's something that we should be intentional about. We have more in just a second.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
A watchful eye must be kept on ourselves, lest, while we're building ideal monuments of renown and bliss here, we neglect to have our names enrolled in the annals of heaven. James Madison.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to weigh in, you can always tweet us at Tactics Radio. We try to get to those as quickly as possible. But there is a lot going on here with the response that has absolutely driven me outside of my mind. And one thing that has done so more than others is the wealth of different celebrity figures coming out talking about how prayers are not helping and they're sick of hearing people talk about praying and they don't want people to actually pray for the victims, saying that it doesn't do anything or it's not actually effective. There's been no shortage of people trying to make that case. Everybody from Hollywood actors and celebrity types to actual elected officials. And it's really, really unfortunate that we have to deal with this. And especially with everything that's going on now, you really hate to see that. But this is going from Richard Blumenthal, Will Wheaton, Representative Pramila Jayapal, a Democrat from Washington, John Povitz, Paul Poundstone, Keith Oberman, Stephen King. And if you'll give me just one moment, I'm going to try to find some of the actual tweets. We won't read all of them, obviously, because there's just so much to go through. That's a long list of names. And frankly, I don't even know that I have all of the ones that I would need. But the point is, when you're dealing with this and we're going through this, I would think that the last thing that these people need at this point is somebody telling them your prayers don't matter. And just, I don't know. This is really the point that we've gotten to in this society, that we're now going after the victims, that we're attacking the faith of the victims in order to make some kind of political statement. And I'm sorry, that just absolutely drives me out of my mind. So why are they doing this? It's not to change people's minds, because if so, that's the worst possible tactic you could come up with to do it. If you don't believe me, if you are an atheist or somebody that's not really religious, flip this around. Let's say that I went to a group of atheists that had just had somebody massacre them. Actually, you know what? Let's do the Pulse nightclub shooting. I'm guessing there were quite a few people that were not Christians, considering the kind of lifestyle that they lived. What if I had gone there and immediately afterwards said, maybe if you weren't gay, God wouldn't be punishing you for being gay? Or maybe if you'd been praying a little more, then this wouldn't have happened. Do you think that would change anybody's mind? Honestly, do you think that would have affected anybody in a positive way? No. And first of all, I don't believe that that is the reason that happened anyway. But if I had gone to them and said that, that's not going to help anybody. It's not going to change their mind. It's not going to change their mind about Christians or God. In fact, if anything, it's probably going to cause that to, if it changes, it'll change negatively as opposed to positively. And I don't think that these people are dumb enough to believe that they're going to change people's minds with this. Is it to shame others and score political points? Well, you could make that argument, but if so, attacking prayer directly doesn't make any sense if that's the case. So what you've got to do at that point is assume that the reason they did it was to poke a finger in the eye of religious people that believe in God and believe that prayer helps. That's it. That's really all it boils down to. Now, the irony of all this, and I want you to really wrap your head around this, the irony of this whole thing is that a lot of people that are saying, well, prayers aren't enough, we need to make some kind of change in the law, or we need some kind of new policy, the ones that are saying that, at the same time they're saying that prayer isn't enough, they want to keep you from caring. Think about that. What they're saying is, well, prayers aren't enough, you need to do things on your own. Well, except for carrying a gun, even though that's doing something on your own, because clearly that's not something you need to do. You don't need to be carrying inside a church building. You don't need to be carrying around to defend yourself, but prayers aren't enough. Well, the whole point of prayer is that you do something first. Like, prayer is not, I pray and then I don't worry about it, or I pray and I don't strive to do it myself. Look, David was promised the kingship for 10 years before he sat on the throne. He was praying for Saul not to be chasing him, but it still happened for 10 years. You do all you can, and then let prayer lead the rest. We'll be back in a moment.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
We talk about prayer and its role in our lives. Now, on Tactics.
Well, when this train ends, I'll try again. I'll leave a mountain at home.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Hour 2 of Tactics. Great to be with each and every one of you this morning. You know, we have been fighting legendary technological difficulties this morning. It seems like every computer wants to fail on us all at the same time, so we try the backups, and even the backups don't work, but it is what it is, and there's really just not a whole lot we can do about it, to be quite honest about it. But we are where we are. Now, getting back to something that we were talking about ahead of time, it is ironic that a lot of the people that are saying prayer isn't enough are also the same people that are saying, but you also shouldn't carry a gun. So prayer's not enough. You should be doing things and taking care of things yourself. But also, you know, we also want to go ahead and take away any resources you have to do that. It's a weird catch-22 that they find themselves in, and the thing is, and this is what bothers me about this whole thing, there are a lot of people this morning that have lost multiple family members, church brethren, neighbors. The last thing they need right now is people mocking them so that they can high-five their idiot atheist buddies about making something that they view as a sick burn. Because to me, that's all this boils down to, seemingly. And no, it's too soon. Let's wait until the bodies are at least cold before we start using them as fodder for a political discussion. I don't think that that's an unfair standard to hold to. I said that when Donald Trump turned it into a political discussion about the whole terrorist attack in New York. It's just as wrong right now. It's just as wrong for this to happen right now when we're talking about gun control. Because this is a broken argument right out of the gate, and I wanted to get into this. First of all, it's unseemly, and it's terrible, but it's also horribly incorrect. Because if you're looking at the way the scripture describes prayer, the way that the scripture talks about prayer, then you have to assume that their argument is completely backwards. Because if you actually read what the scripture has to say about prayers and the stories of faith and virtue that come from them, then you get a very different idea of how the whole system works. Here is a comprehensive list of all the verses that promise that bad things will never happen to people that are faithful in praying. Yep, that's the whole list. There's not a single verse that promises that. There are verses that promise that if you pray, that comfort will be given. There are verses that promise that if you pray, that the Lord is going to be with you through some of the troubles that you're experiencing. Never once. And I'm a minister. I'm a Bible scholar. I was a Bible major at Faulkner for a while before I transferred. I plan to go back at some point to get my master's in ministry and biblical studies. I have read the Bible more times than I can count from beginning to end. Nowhere have I ever came across a verse, and believe me, it would have stuck out if it had, that promised that if you are faithful and you pray, that bad things will never happen to you. In fact, the Bible kind of gives the exact opposite. I don't mean that if you pray, bad things will happen to you. But what I'm talking about is some of the people who live faithfully, some of the people that most had God's favor, were the ones that had the most trouble when it came to things like this. We can look at, like I mentioned before the break, David. David was a notoriously frequent prayer, and he was still pursued by Saul for 10 years. Cut off from his family, cut off from the nation that he loved, even stopped from worshiping because he had to hide with Philistines. And it wasn't because David did anything wrong. It wasn't because he had messed up or he didn't pray often enough. David was experiencing consequences of someone else's evil actions, which happens all the time to people in the scripture. Doing what's right and doing what God asks you to do does not mean you're going to be immune from every evil thing that can befall you in this world. The only way that argument makes any sense if you believe that God's essentially a giant gumball machine. This is kind of the prosperity gospel that Joel Osteen peddles. That when you're looking at God, you just say your prayers and eat your veggies and do everything right, and then he pops out whatever it is you're asking for. But that's not the way the Bible works. That's not the way any of this works. And so if you believe that, I guess it makes sense that you could say, well, obviously prayer wasn't protecting them. They were in a church and they were praying, so they don't need prayers. That's not how prayer works at all. There are records, different stories in the Bible of, since we were just talking about David and Saul, 400 priests being slaughtered in the place of worship. All throughout the Bible, kind of a violent time to live. Jezebel slew hundreds of prophets in their tabernacles and in their synagogues. This was a very violent time if you're looking through the Bible, and there is no promise that you will always be safe from people who want to do bad things to you if you pray. It certainly helps. David prayed many times to be delivered from his enemies. But it wasn't something that was a guarantee. And we also have that nearly all the prophets and the apostles died horrible, violent deaths for their beliefs. That's pretty much across the board. There were a few prophets that were spared that. Elijah was taken up in a cloud and a whirlwind of fire. We have that John, he was exiled, so he did die on an island in exile. He didn't actually get executed, but he's the only apostle that we know of that wasn't killed or horribly maimed and then killed before going on to his heavenly reward. So that's just kind of where we are right now. You cannot say that just because somebody prays that they're going to be immune to all the bad things in this world. When God talks about prayer, he promises peace, shelter from an evil world, but he doesn't promise that you'll be vaccinated from all its horrible consequences. In fact, the exact opposite is usually true. Prayer could have prevented this, though. I'm going to go ahead and make that point. Prayer could have prevented this. It is possible that prayer could have stopped this event. Not from the people that were praying in the church. This man, who was an atheist and hated religious people, if he had prayed, surrendered his will to God, obeyed his commands, then prayer would have been what prevented this from happening. He would have prayed for God to change his heart and to forgive him of his sins. And if he had done it the way that the Bible prescribes and obeyed the gospel and done all the things that God asked him to do with believing the world, confessing his faith, being baptized, all that, this man could have had prayer prevent him from doing something like this. So prayer could have stopped it, but not their prayer, his prayer. And so now here's the other interesting question. That's the story for lots of different people. We had a caller just the other day who works with people that are troubled, that deal with addiction to opioids and things like that. And three different people said on the same night at one of these events that they had stopped hearing voices because they prayed. So here's the question. How many times has prayer actually prevented a mass shooting like this? We don't know because that doesn't become a news story. It's impossible for us to know that. But prayer could have prevented this mass shooting if this individual had prayed and prayed for forgiveness and prayed to have Christ turn his life around and fill his heart with the love of Christ. Unfortunately, that did not happen for this young man. And we certainly continue to pray for all those who were involved because what God does promise in prayer is peace, comfort, not necessarily answers, but a sense of hopefulness through faith in his Son that this world is not the end. Those are the things that is guaranteed through prayer. We'll be back in just a second.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
As to Jesus of Nazareth, my opinion of whom you particularly desire, I think the system of morals and his religion, as he left them to us, the best the world ever saw or is likely to see. Benjamin Franklin.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in at Tactics Radio. You can get in touch with us through that. And we do have a caller on line one, so let's go ahead and go to Mike on line one. Good morning, Mike.
Oh, good morning. I've been listening. It's every time something happens, in relation to a mass shooting or a school shooting or something, the typical response from the left is we've got to take away the rights of, people that own guns or something. It's always blaming, an inanimate object about, something. What typically bothers me about it is they never understand that when you do that, you are subverting the Bill of Rights, I don't want to go into it, but that way, but...
I understand.
Where is I going to go with this? It's like the government is giving us our rights. They don't give us our rights. And I don't know why, well, I do know why, it's because of the education system. They seem to, everybody lately seems to believe that government gives us our rights, and they don't. And I don't know.
I don't know if
it's the incompetence of the system, or what. But, this is what we have to deal with right now today.
Well, this is something that I've actually talked about at length several times on my program, Mike, and you're 100% right on that your rights do come from God. They are not given to you benevolently by the government or anything like that. In fact, this was not a controversial belief not that long ago. I played a clip on my show when I believe it was when they were talking about how stupid Judge Moore was for saying that your rights come from God, and they completely missed the ball on that. I guess they forgot about the Declaration of Independence, which directly states that. But I played a clip from John F. Kennedy talking about how our rights are delivered by the hand of God and not by mankind or the government. That's JFK, Democrat president. That was in the 1960s. This was not like an eternity ago. It wasn't that long ago that everybody knew and understood that. And I'm not sure exactly why. And I know Mike, who, by the way, Mike, thank you for your call. Mike is having a hard time wrapping his head around this, and I don't blame him because I am too. How do you get to the point to where you believe that your rights are granted to you by the government with all the U.S. history that's out there? It's blatant and obvious that that's not the case if you know anything about history. But I guess part of it's the education system, but at the end of the day, whose fault is that really? Who's in charge of educating the children? Parents are. And so I'm not trying to lay a blame game on parents or anything like this. I know it's a tough job. I know it's one that I don't have a lot of right to speak on because I'm not a parent myself. So, but at the end of the day, a child's education is up to the parents. And so if you want your kid to grow up believing that your rights do come from God, show them the documents and show them the letters and show them the writings of the founders that say that, because, guys, the public schools are not going to do it. That falls to you. And maybe then they'll understand why we have an inalienable God-given right to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom to own a firearm if we want to, freedom to be secure in our own papers and documents. They'll understand that these aren't things that the government gives to you and then can take away on a whim. It's something that God gave us and the government is there to preserve. Let's go to another caller online too. Good morning. What's your name?
This is James.
Hey, James. What's on your mind this morning?
Well, I just wondered when people are going to wake up and really appreciate the fact that you just cannot legislate morality. You know, no government, no legislative body is going to be able to pass a law that makes people love each other. And it just seems to me like a spiritual answer is never considered in these types of heinous situations. And people are just so scared to come out and just consider that as an option, that maybe we need as a country to be supporting spiritual values and encouraging more church participation and more praying and more youth groups and more spiritual development, starting early in childhood and being raised with these good Christian values. You know, I think American values and spiritual values are the same.
Well, and you're right there. There was a time where our society understood that, James, and they understood that that's where it came from. And there is a unfortunate growing movement of not just atheists or agnostics or people that are anti-religion. I've noticed Christians saying this a lot, where they say about an issue, they'll say, well, all we can do is pray, as though that's some kind of last-ditch resort, that it's the what you do when it's the only thing you got left and you're pretty sure it's, you know, there's nothing left that can work, so you go to prayer. Prayer should be our first resort. Because I got to tell you, for those of you who don't know, and I don't bring this up any more than I have to, but I'm going through chemotherapy right now because I have cancer, and I've got people praying for me. I mean, letters have been pouring in. I've literally had to wedge letters out of the mailbox. I'm getting so many letters and cards, and thank you for sending those, by the way, of people saying that they're praying for me. I got to tell you, if I had to pick between stop doing my medical treatment and stop getting the prayers, I'd have to pick not doing the medical treatment anymore, because God's going to determine whether I live or die. The treatment may help with that, and I think it does. That's why I'm doing it. But if I had to pick between one or the other, I think the prayer is the more effective of the two.
Well, prayer certainly does change things, and I know that I can see it in my own life, and I'm sure that if you opened up your program to testimony, you would get thousands of people calling in, sharing their own personal experiences of the way prayer changes things. But this country really is bankrupt spiritually, and when these politicians start realizing that, and realizing that, you know, a separation of church and state does not mean that you are free from religion. Our forefathers made it possible for us to express our religion, and that's why this country was born, primarily so that we could express our religion. But there is spiritual bankruptcy in this country, and this country will not be getting better and improving until we realize that and start making it a priority for some of our politicians to support ideas that bring the government and our spiritual views closer together. I'll hang up and go, but thank you for letting me call.
Yes, sir. Thank you, James. I appreciate that. And the thing that James was saying, I want to go back to what his original point was, which was legislating morality. There is no law that is going to make people not be bad. Because let's look at all the laws that this person broke. First of all, he murdered people. Whether you do that with a gun or whether you do it with your own bare hands, that's illegal. He purchased a firearm, even though he knew he was not legally allowed to have one. So even though the database fell through and they didn't have all the details, and that was due to human error, regardless, it was still against the law for him to have them, which means he broke that law knowingly doing so. That's the thing. Criminals do not care if they break laws. That's why they're criminals. Because they're not concerned with whether or not a law is broken or not. You cannot make people be good. You can make laws that say that they have to do certain things to protect the rights of others, and that's a good thing. That's something I support. It should have been illegal for this guy to have a gun. But at the same time, them making it illegal didn't stop it from happening. Let's look at the drug epidemic. And I'm not necessarily one that has strong feelings on either side of that debate, to be perfectly honest. It doesn't affect my life all that much. I'm not unsympathetic to the arguments on one side or the other. It's just not something that personally affects me, so I don't take a strong stance one way or the other most of the time. But let's look at the drug epidemic. Them outlawing marijuana has not stopped people from smoking marijuana. They do it all the time. And I only say that to bring up the point that if you think that making something illegal means that that law is never going to be broken again, you're out of your mind. There's some things that absolutely should be illegal. Murder, bad. We should make that illegal. I don't think anybody would say that there ought not be consequences for killing another human being. Well, I mean, except maybe Planned Parenthood, but that aside. But the point is, you cannot make people just and moral and good people simply by waving a magic wand and wanting them to be. And that's something that the left really needs to wrap their head around, and the right sometimes too, frankly. Because I've run into extremists. I don't want to live in a theocracy. I don't want to live to where blaspheming God is a punishable offense or anything like that. You have the freedom to speak your mind. We should be talking about those ideas. But you cannot use the blunt force of law to make people make right decisions. It just doesn't work. All we can do is punish them when a violation of that law takes place. And when somebody does something like this, obviously he's dead, so there's nothing you can do to him. But obviously, when something like this happens, they should be punished to the full extent of the law. And I don't know a single person, pro-gun or anti-gun, that disagrees with that in the least. 860-1440 are the numbers. We'll be back in just a second with another story involving a shooting at a woman's house when we come back.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. Now, I was going to give this story. I've actually had it on my show's outline for 3 days now. I had it on Friday as well. So before the church shooting even took place, I had planned on covering the story. I just had not had enough time in any of my shows to get to it. But I do think it's an important story. There was an 80-year-old woman from Marin, Arkansas. Sleepy little neighborhood, not many people, not much trouble, or doesn't get on the news very often, who shoots an intruder to her house. Apparently, a young man breaks into her house, triggers an alarm. She lives alone, so she was woken up by the alarm. And when she did, she grabbed her firearm and ran into the young man who's there in her house. She warned him to get out. Instead of getting out, he starts walking towards her. She warns him, and then he keeps walking towards her, so she shoots and winds up killing him. It is a sad thing that this guy lost his life. All loss of life is, of course, something that we would want to mourn. But at the same time, it is better that she was able to defend herself rather than her getting hurt and becoming a victim. And just like in the Texas story that we were covering earlier today, good guys with guns stop bad guys with guns. I don't know if this man in particular was armed or not. The story doesn't say, so I assumed that he wasn't. But either way, good guys with guns stop bad guys. And this is one of the things that I thought about, because I once said, and I was 100% sincere in saying this, that even though I am pro-gun, I think that if I had a magic button that I could press that would eliminate the invention of the firearm, I would do it. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought that that would actually be a really bad idea for a lot of people. Because I want people to not get killed as often, and as much as I enjoy guns, I thought maybe the world really would be a better place if they were never invented. But the world was a pretty dangerous, violent place before then. And one of the great things about firearms now is it is a great equalizer. Did you know that a lot of national shooting organizations are now considering completely eliminating the different male and female divisions within their contest because the results are so close they can't find a measurable difference between male and female shooters? That's not true in almost any sport. If you don't believe me, look at all the controversy we're having with the transgendered thing with wrestling and boxing and all those different. And when we're trying to eliminate completely that line between males and females, physically it can't be done because we're just not built the same way. But when it comes to shooting, apparently women are just as good as the guys are, which makes sense. It doesn't take a ton of upper body strength. Usually, I mean, it depends on what you're shooting sometimes, but 9 times out of 10, you're going to be okay either way. And I don't see why their aim would be any different than our aim. So as long as you know what you're doing and you can handle yourself, there's no reason to believe that a female shooter would not be just as good, just as effective at taking down a target as a male shooter would be. Guns are the great equalizer, because here's the thing. This is a teenage boy. Maybe a man. I guess he could have been 18 or 19. They didn't give his exact age. But either way, this is a young man and an 80-year-old woman. Do you think that she would have stood any hope of getting away from him, or him not being able to do whatever he wanted to her or her house, had it not been for a firearm? Because she was armed, that put her on an even playing ground, or maybe in this case, better playing ground, on an equal footing with him. And she was able to protect herself because of that. You see, lawful defensive use of guns happens all the time. According to the FBI stats, at least 200 times a day, and those are just the ones that we know about. There's no telling how many robberies or crimes are stopped just by somebody having a gun, open carrying, or somebody that draws their gun to defend themselves and the person runs away because he doesn't want to get shot, but no shots are actually fired. how many domestic disputes does it stop? We don't know. We'll never know. But if we're just looking at the stats, 200 defensive uses of firearms per day in the United States of America. Now, Obama specifically passed legislation that unfairly discriminated against the elderly through the Social Security program to take their guns. Even the ACLU sided with President Trump on that. They were against Obama's legislation. And yet, turn on the TV the other day, and sure enough, within 3 minutes of watching it, you had Chris Cuomo on CNN, who ironically made some pretty interesting statements the other day, actually said that I don't see how you could see it any other way, in response to a woman saying that our neighbor, the guy that shot the murderer in the Texas shooting, stopped more people from stopped this from being much worse. And he said, I don't see how you can see it any other way, which was really strange coming from Chris Cuomo. But of course, when I turned it on, I didn't find out about that one until later. When I turned it on, within 3 minutes, he was talking about how Donald Trump undid this regulation that made it harder for people with mental illnesses to get guns. First of all, this wouldn't have affected him in the least, so I don't know what that has to do with this story. This guy was not on Social Security. He was 26 years old. Secondly, like I said, even the ACLU sided with Trump on this and said, look, whether you're for guns or against guns, there needs to be some due process here. These people are just taking people's guns at random without proving that they're actually mentally disabled. You can't do that. Fifth Amendment, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. You can't just take people's property regardless of what it is unless there's a due process involved in it. And of course, now the left is claiming that Trump is the one to blame for this and that he made it unsafe. And I'm all for getting guns away from people who are actually mentally deranged, people that really shouldn't have them, like this person who's been involved in domestic disputes that shouldn't have been allowed to have a gun, that was illegal for him to buy a gun. But this law that they were specifically citing, because this is an elderly woman, this might have made this woman defenseless if she was using somebody else to take care of her finances for her. That's all it required. If somebody else was taking care of your finances for you, whether you could have done it yourself or not was not part of the question. The Social Security could report you and have people come to your house and take your firearms. This woman had this law stayed into effect. I don't know this. I don't know what her financial situation was. But her or somebody like her could have been made defenseless and had an intruder attack her to where she had no way of defending herself, and she could have been murdered or raped or whatever. But the point is, these rules have repercussions. And when you make a policy, not even a law, a policy like this that takes away people's rights, there are going to be consequences. And thankfully, apparently it didn't affect this woman because she still had her firearms. But it is amazing to me that some people on the left would be perfectly okay with taking away this person's right to self-preservation. Simple truth is that firearms save far more lives in this country a day than they cost. But you're never going to see that talked about, never going to see that news story, because it's not news when a criminal dies and no victim is created. Chaplin's report is coming up.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Hebrews 13, 5 and 6. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What will man do to me?
Welcome back, all. You're listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in and let me know what is on your mind. Before we move on to the Chaplain's Report, I do want to tell you about my good friends down at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. There are a lot of things going on in the world right now. Weather's changing. The football season, the playoffs are coming. I know a lot of you are going to be traveling for that, hopefully.
You know, Iron Bowl's coming up, Georgia's coming up. A lot of you are going to be going to some of these big name games. I'm going to be going to the La Mo game myself because, you know, I'm cheap and can't afford the big ticket items. But if you're going to be going to wherever your favorite college is, whether it's in Baton Rouge or College Station or Auburn or Tuscaloosa, wherever it may be, you need to make sure that your car is running properly. You've got to make sure that whatever it is, you're not stuck on the side of the road with your family trying to figure out how you're going to get to the game, if you're going to make the game, if it's better to just miss the game and go home and waste all those tickets and all that time. Don't do that. Just go ahead and have your car fixed, because last thing you want is a bunch of angry football fans behind you telling you to get off the road because your car won't start. So whether it's getting ready for the winter, maybe you need some new tires so you're not sliding around all over the place. You need to make sure that whatever it is in your engine is ready for the cold weather. You need to get a new battery maybe. This cold weather sometimes affects your battery. You can get all that tested and checked out at Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. Maybe you just need a regular oil change. Maybe you need major engine repair. Doesn't matter. Whatever it is, go down to Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. See them. Tell them that Caleb Colquitt sent you. They know who I am. They love me down there. And they're going to give you a good price. I tell you to tell them that, and they'll give you a discount, but they can't give you a discount because they already give you a great deal. They give everybody a great deal. That's just how they are. That's the reason they've been in business for 50 years, is because they offer great service at great prices. It's just as simple as that. So go by and see my friends at Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. We are going to jump into the chaplain's report. In the book of Job, and we're going to talk about prayer and the power of prayer and the promises of what prayer will do in your life. In the book of Job, Satan and God are having this conversation. And God's asking Satan, "So where have you been? What have you been up to?" And he says, "Oh, I've been roaming around the world looking at it and tempting people, and there are no good people really in the world," and kind of trying to rub it in God's face about what's going on. And then God says this in Job 1:8. "The Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on earth, blameless and upright, fearing God and turning away from evil.'" Holy cow. Can you imagine having God talk about you like that? Blameless and upright? Referring to you specifically as his servant? What a compliment. And so, think about this. The Lord himself is calling Job blameless and upright. This is obviously somebody that God loves, God respects, and he honors, because Job honors him. And yet we know what happened to Job. Job lost all his wealth, his herds, his servants, and all his children within minutes. In fact, the way that the scripture describes it is when each of the servants comes to tell him that he's lost something, another servant shows up just as he finishes telling him the first. So within the matter of a few minutes, Job lost absolutely everything he had. He was no longer wealthy. He no longer had any herds. All his children were dead. He had nothing left. The only thing that the devil left him with was a nagging wife that he probably would have been better off without, honestly, because she was constantly tempting him to curse God and die because of what's happening, and he had to tell her, "No, don't talk like that. You're speaking like a foolish person." Even through living through all that, what Job said was, "The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Was it because Job didn't pray enough? No. Job prayed a lot. In fact, in the verses prior to, we find out that he prayed and sacrificed daily. And when this horrible thing befell him, he shaved his head and sat on sackcloth and ashes and prayed for days and nights on end. And Job did everything right. Nothing negative was talked about Job before this. Now, he gets to the point where he doubts a little bit as this is going on, but as far as beforehand, God refers to him as being blameless and upright. So this wasn't because Job wasn't faithful enough. That's my whole point. People that think that prayer is useless because bad things happen to people that pray don't understand the scripture at all. Job's just one example of hundreds I could pull out of the Bible. Job prayed. Job prayed vehemently. And you know what? Job had three friends that came to visit him, four friends really, and they all believed that he had sinned or done something to cause this, but when God finally answers, he never says why all this happened to Job, but what he did say was, Job hasn't done anything wrong. Job spoke correctly about me. You guys didn't. And so, when we're looking at this, his friends, his wife, all believe that he had done something bad to result in this, but God still never gave Job an answer. Not really. He never explained to him why that was all happening. And yet, he helped Job through this difficult time and blessed him. And after all was said and done, he had even more wealth than before. He had more children than before. Job was still a blessed man, and God still looked after him. See, that's what the promise of prayer is. The promise of prayer is that you're not that you're never going to have anything terrible happen to you. It's that when those things happen to you, God is going to be with you, offering strength and comfort. Keep in mind, Jesus prayed in the garden to not be crucified, and he was crucified the next day. Praying doesn't guarantee safety from everything. What it does guarantee is that God is always going to be there with us. Job survived his ordeal because the first thing he did was fast and pray. That was his first response. It didn't end his suffering. It allowed him to endure it. That's the sort of prayer we need right now for Texas and for this country. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.